listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. The low-hanging fruit. In the martial arts, an important tactical concept is, assuming that there is an opening in the opponent's defenses, to probe and then attack there first. One way of expressing this is to go first for the low-hanging fruit. In the world of scientific skepticism versus pseudoscience, there are also easier targets and harder targets. Perhaps the lowest hanging fruit in this world is the pseudoscience called homeopathy. I was visiting once at another martial arts school when I overheard the salesperson at the school's merchandise counter discussing a dietary supplement that was offered for sale there. "It's homeopathic," the saleswoman said, in a tone that implied that she meant by this that it was of high quality. This was a long time ago, and I was more interested in the conversation I was having with the school owner. Plus, I was not yet educated about homeopathy, so the assertion meant little to me at the time, but it stuck in my memory for some reason. I had heard frequent references to it in the past in places like vitamin shops, health food stores, and in the offices of massage therapists and chiropractors. So I guess I just lumped homeopathy in with naturopathy and granola and deep tissue massage and gave it no further thought. But as is so often the case on the Martial Brain, and in the universe at large, the truth, the whole truth, is more interesting than you might think. A man named Samuel Hahnemann coined the term homeopathy in Germany over 2 centuries ago, when medical knowledge was very primitive. This was half a century before Louis Pasteur and others began accumulating enough evidence to effectively propose and prove the germ theory of disease transmission. During Samuel Hahnemann's time, the miasma theory of disease transmission was accepted by most doctors. This was the idea that virtually all disease was caused by breathing bad air. Hahnemann was a firm supporter of the miasma theory. He was investigating the use of cinchona bark as a treatment for malaria, a disease far more common in temperate climates like Germany and the U.S. in those days. Hahnemann was translating a medical treatise written by a Scotsman named William Cullen into German when he came across Cullen's claim that the bark of the cinchona plant was effective as a treatment for malaria. Hahnemann decided to investigate the plant for himself, which was sensible. He then did something less sensible. He took a large dose of cinchona himself. As a result, he experienced joint pain, shivering, and fever. Now, these were similar symptoms to those of malaria itself. From this, Hahnemann made the astonishing leap to deciding that an idea from ancient medicine must be true. This was the idea that a drug that induces the same symptoms in a healthy person as those induced by a particular disease, then that drug will treat, or ideally cure, that same disease. So by this logic, a drug that causes a healthy person to turn purple and have uncontrollable flatulence should be appropriate for any disease that also causes these symptoms. Hahnemann proudly dubbed this concept the law of similars. When he tried a smaller dose of cinchona on himself, he noticed, as one would expect, that the symptoms were less intense than before. From this result, he took another astonishing leap of logic. He decided that not only did reducing the dose of a drug reduce its side effects, it actually increased its curative powers. Now I want you to listen carefully to what I just said. Hahnemann actually decided that the smaller the dose of a drug one takes, the greater the potency it will have. Well, there goes the dose-response curve. Hahnemann called this idea the law of infinitesimals. This, quote, law, unquote, led to an arcane practice of diluting drug solutions in order to reduce the dose. This process, called dynamization, or potentization by homeopaths, consists of diluting the substance in either distilled water or alcohol, and then shaking it vigorously. This shaking is called succussion and was believed by Hahnemann to, quote, activate the vital energy, unquote, of the substance being diluted. Vital energy is Hahnemann's name for a mystical, spiritual force that he felt ran throughout nature and was necessary for healing. Sounds like a Western version of chi to me. And I see a lack of evidence for the existence of vital energy, similar to the lack of evidence I see for chi. This dilution process was to be repeated a prescribed number of times. Hahnemann developed the centesimal, or C, scale of dilution. By this scale, 1C means that the solution has been diluted to 1/100th of its original concentration. 2C means that you take the 1C solution and do another 1C dilution to it. So 2C is 1/100th of 1/100th, which is 1/10,000th the concentration of the original sample. The standard dilution recommended by Hahnemann was 30C, which is still commonly used today. Now, if you grasp the math here and remember high school chemistry, you might remember studying molarity and Avogadro's number, which deal with determining the number of atoms of a substance in a given volume. By the logic put forth in homeopathy's law of infinitesimals, the strongest possible dose of a drug should be a single molecule of it. But after homeopathic dilution to a simple level of 13C, our knowledge of molarity tells us that there's pretty much zero chance of even a single molecule of the drug remaining. At the level of 30C, we are entering into the realm of mathematical absurdity. What does that mean? Quite simply, it means that homeopathic treatments are nothing, devoid of substance, the very essence of non-existence. They consist of nothing but the dilution medium itself, which is usually water, but could also be alcohol or sugar. The hilarious part is that when confronted with this fact, that the extreme levels of dilution used in homeopathy mathematically eliminate all trace of the original substance, down to way beyond the last molecule, modern practitioners of homeopathy respond that the water retains a, quote, vibrational memory, unquote, of the substance that was in it before the dilution began. Yes, you heard me correctly. This was not the response of a few isolated wackos. That's the actual standard position of homeopathy today, which is an embarrassingly large industry. This vibrational memory idea is another example of a logical fallacy. The fallacy is called moving the goalposts, or raising the bar. Moving the goalposts is when the party making a claim is presented with strong evidence that the claim is false, and then makes a new claim, essentially demanding that the new claim also be addressed. Moving the goalposts is an elegant way of saying, well, now you're just making shit up. But you might ask, wait a minute, Jeff. What's the harm if people want to seek a placebo effect from a homeopathic remedy? While homeopathic remedies essentially consist of nothing, the nothing is never free, but comes at a cost. First of all, homeopathically prepared substances are sold as commercial products. There are annual sales of these products in the area of $3 billion. Yes, my friends, you heard me correctly, billion with a B. There are enough grown-up people out there with jobs and money to spend $3 billion a year on medications that are nothing but water. Do you think those dollars could be put to better use? Another cost is time wasted on pseudo-drugs that do nothing, time that could have been employed seeking more accurate diagnoses and more effective remedies. And finally, each time you pay money for homeopathy, you help prop up pseudoscience and non-critical thinking across the spectrum. Now, at one point in time, homeopathy was arguably better than what passed for medicine at the time, for the simple reason that many of the mainstream pre-scientific medical techniques, like bloodletting, the use of purgatives to force vomiting, and the many witches' brews that passed as medicines, were actually harmful. Whereas homeopathic remedies simply did absolutely nothing, neither doing good nor causing harm. Thus it became common wisdom that going to a homeopath was a more pleasant experience, frequently with a less unpleasant outcome, than going to a doctor. But that was 200 years ago. Even as medicine adopted the scientific method and modernized, becoming in the process vastly superior to homeopathy, this preference for homeopathy, this customer loyalty, if you will, persisted among a large fraction of the population. Let's compare the situation to the number line from grade school math class. Medicine traveled, in a bit more than a century, from being a negative number to being a positive number. In most cases, a very positive number. Homeopathy started at, and remains today firmly at, zero. Widespread scientific illiteracy has contributed greatly to the stubborn adherence by some to homeopathy. By the way, it turns out that cinchona is an effective treatment for malaria. The reason this is true is that it contains a substance called quinine. After Hahnemann's time, scientific medicine discovered that malaria is caused by a microscopic parasite. It was further discovered that quinine kills this parasite. That is, unless you dilute the quinine down to pure water. And yes, homeopathic malaria pills are available, especially in Great Britain. Considering that almost 500,000 people die each year from malaria, it should be a crime to peddle such nonsense. What's the harm indeed? You also might ask, okay, Jeff, if what you are saying is true, how is it possible that in the heavily regulated U.S. drug industry, useless preparations like those from homeopathy aren't immediately exposed for what they are and pulled from the shelves of drugstores? To answer that question, I need to tell you about a bill passed by Congress way back in 1938. The bill was called the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. Before this act was passed, anyone could sell any concoction they wanted with little fear of negative consequences. The Federal Drug and Cosmetic Act greatly strengthened the power of the government, through the Food and Drug Administration, to regulate substances sold as medicine. It wouldn't be until the 1950s that the concept of prescription drugs even came into being. But for the first time, the Federal Drug and Cosmetic Act of 1938 required that drugs be tested for effectiveness and safety before being sold to the public. Now comes the truly sick part. One of the main sponsors of this bill was New York Senator and Doctor of Homeopathy, Mr. Royal Copeland. Copeland made sure that the law was written so that when passed, it created loopholes that protected homeopathic preparations from the scrutiny the FDA normally gives to drugs. Believe it or not, these exceptions continue to this day. Homeopathic drugs are regulated by the bill, but it's stipulated that they are regulated by a separate set of standards from that applied to regular drugs. Instead, the regulations are based on the standards of homeopathic medicine. This gives legal status to homeopathy as a separate and parallel form of medicine that is allowed to regulate itself. Fortunately, very recently, the FDA is finally applying pressure to change the law. Let's all keep a good thought on that front. In closing, I'll share a few appropriately snarky observations about homeopathy that I've heard. The jokes really write themselves. My friend gave me a pill bottle with 5 billion dehydrated doses of homeopathic medicine. There's nothing in the bottle. Just add water. Water molecules exist for billions of years. Do they retain the vibrational memory of all the poop that has been in that water? And I got the last one from Dr. Angie Kazel-Matke. After SEAL Team 6 shot Osama bin Laden right through the eye, the U.S. Navy dumped his body into the ocean. The ocean should dilute the hell out of bin Laden's carcass, right? Well then, if the laws of similars and infinitesimals are real, how come dumping this despicable asshole's remains into the ocean didn't cure terrorism? Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think. Or check out old episodes of the Martial Brain podcast at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for the Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com. martialarts.com.